Welcome to the Urban Tree Junkies podcast, developed for tree enthusiasts and designed for the betterment of our urban trees and forests. I'm Ryan Murphy from the University of Minnesota's Urban Forestry Outreach, Research, and Extension Nursery and Lab. Today's episode begins with the concept of fractals. Have you ever noticed that the matter around us, such as lightning bolts, ice crystals, and mountain ranges, have repeating patterns? Fractals, the phenomenon of natural structures that continually replicate similar forms to make a superstructure, was first coined by the mathematician Benoit Mandelbrot in the 1970s. The word fractal may be only decades old, but the concept is centuries in the making, including its application to trees. The great observationist Leonardo da Vinci noted this relationship in the late 1400s, suggesting that trees replicate their structure so that the mass is equal from the trunk to the meristem if you were to collapse it like a sensu paper fan. Having the knowledge that our lignified brothers grow in this organized fashion has piqued the interest of arborists. With this theory in hand, our guest today, Nick Grebe from Branch and Bio Tree Service, applies the concepts to the pruning of urban trees. Often, urban trees planted in open spaces with little neighboring competition tend to grow into physiologically undesirable forms. If left unchecked, many species will become prematurely decurrent, quickly developing into structurally unstable mature trees. Therefore, pruning newly planted trees is critical to their long-term stability. Throngs of literature has been developed on this topic, but a consistent language has not been established. With fractals not only being fun to say, but relevant to the discipline, Nick developed the language of fractal pruning in an effort to streamline the tree development process, especially for organizations with multiple arborists. We sit down and discuss with Nick the fractal language of pruning, his career, and experiences as a climbing arborist. First, let's jump back to that, this rule, that 1-3, right?
Yep.
So that's out of research done by Gilman.
Yep.
And can you just tell me a little bit more about that?
So Gilman's research is looking at, he's trying to make trees look like trees. One of my friend Jeff Hafner always talked about one of the great exercises in getting people to understand trees is have them draw a tree. When everyone draws a tree, they draw this big single trunk, branches up top, and they have them draw a person next to it, and they draw the person like super small. Like, we imagine trees like these big black forest, you know, maple basswood, big woods kind of trees. And really, when you walk around outside, they all have short trunks and they branch really low. And so Gilman was trying to get trees to look more like the big trees that we all draw because they're biomechanically more structurally sound. Those long levers starting low snap off, they have a lot of weight. So he was trying to get boulevard trees up and reduce long-term failures. So he did like a reduce to remove, take off a third, come back in a year or two or three, depending on species and, you know, budget. And it was all city pruning, a lot of what his stuff was. And so they would take off a third and then come back on their cycle, which was a little long, and take off another third. And so when we started trying to do that, that's where we had problems with the aesthetics of, like, it looks really rough. And I don't, as a production arborist in residential, I don't have to get 15-foot clearance for a plow truck. So I don't feel as bound to get rid of branches. So we started shrinking those cut sizes. So we used Gilman's research to influence how we were going to make the cuts, but we just didn't push it as fast. Mm-hmm. We also had the luxury of coming back every 2 years for a lot of clients, as long as you could get the price down enough. That was always the hard part, is like to get two skilled arborists on site so they could safely climb and produce. You had to charge a certain amount, and that could be too expensive, but that was just another problem we had to try to tackle. But we moved away from Gilman's, like, reduce to remove, because you don't necessarily have to.
Yeah,
it can be a really functional way to get a tree to that big tree status. Mm-hmm. But I don't have to do it, so I'm also a kind of a procrastinator. I like just pruning the tree and letting the tree do its response and then coming back.
We hope you enjoyed the first part of our episode on fractal pruning. In part two, Nick will continue to expand on his methodology, touching on the practicality with various tree ages and species, how this common language can make organizations more efficient, and further explanation of what fractals actually are. Nick developed this method through consultation and conversation with the boricultural professionals who are referenced in this podcast. For ease of listener comprehension and acknowledgement of contributions, the following is a brief introduction of those individuals. Neville Fay, who is the principal arboricultural consultant and director of tree work environmental practice and an independent researcher in Bedminster, Bristol, United Kingdom. Jeff Hafner, who is the director of municipal consulting for Rainbow Tree Care in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And Dr. Ed Gilman, who is professor emeritus in the environmental horticulture department at the University of Florida. So could you just maybe give me like a concise explanation of primary, secondary, and tertiary?
So the easy example I give is if you drew a two-dimensional version of a Christmas tree.
Yep.
So you got the trunk going vertically and horizontal lines that once you draw them out, the longer ones are on the bottom, makes kind of that triangle shape.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the primary shape for that tree. The secondary would be the horizontal branches coming off of that, and they also have perpendicular lines making a mini Christmas tree, but it's 90 degrees from the primary.
Yeah.
And then the tertiary would, again, you could draw it again, same shape, but it's smaller. How did Neville Fay put it? He said a fractal is the part is same as the whole. So that little branchlet, that's the tertiary, is the same shape as the primary. So that's true for, like, a conifer is an easy example, but then you can look at, like, an elm tree. Most people who are familiar with looking at trees can drive past an elm tree at 40 miles an hour and go, that's an elm tree. It looks like an elm tree. You look at the branch angle, you look at taper, you look at how it grows, and you can say, that's it. Well, if you cut off one of those branches and stood back far enough and held it up, its silhouette would somewhat match the rest of the elm tree.
Mm-hmm.
So when you start to look at that big elm tree, you can say, okay, the primary shape is the overall shape of the elm tree, and then each major lead coming off of that is the secondary.
Mm-hmm.
So you can say, like, there's, you know, 15 secondaries on this elm if it's buried deep current.
Yeah.
And then from on each one of those, you can go out and make your primary cut. So you, from that, if you trace it all out, and it's based on taper, the fattest one at each union, until you get to the end, then you find out, well, that's your meristem. So if your cut size is make a primary cut on the secondary branch over the house, and don't make your cut bigger than 2 inches, the climber now knows where the branch is, how far out to go on that branch, and to make a reduction cut to slow that branch down, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So one thing I sort of struggle with is, so if say I'm going to go prune or teach somebody how to prune a crab apple.
Mm-hmm.
Now, would you say, so you mentioned that, so a dogwood is sort of a scaled-down version of a big shade tree.
Yep.
Would you say that that holds across the board for lots of things, most things?
That's generally how I see it. So there's a couple of people that I've taught, like, that had some tree background but didn't understand pruning, and I taught one of them just using fractal language several years ago on a crab apple in a front yard. He's like, I kind of understand in pruning, but I don't really. And I was like, okay, we're going to go through the three cuts. And the three cuts are the same no matter what species you're doing or what size. You got your reduction cut, where you're taking the larger to the smaller, roughly a third of the size. And then you're doing your heading cut, which is taking it to a smaller branch that's less than a third in size of the branch taken off. And then you've got your thinning cut, where you're taking the smaller one off. Those are the only three cuts. Every cut you're going to make falls in those three categories. And now to find out where those cuts are, you just start at the bottom of that crab apple. And if you're going to reduce the crab apple because everyone for some reason wants crab apples that are 10 feet tall because someone told them that that's what they should be, so we got to try to keep it that size. We have to go through and find enough of those meristems that we can pull that crown back. So we have to trace the whole. We can map the whole thing. These are all the secondaries. On those secondaries, we can make all their primary cuts. Maybe some secondary cuts on the secondaries. That's where the language gets a little messy. But by doing that, you can map it out, make those cuts, and get done with the tree, like what I consider done for that dose. I don't know if we're going to be able to keep it perfectly that size, but you can then say, all right, we pruned that whole crab apple. Now I know when I'm done. And that person literally walked to that whole crab apple right after it, and he didn't do it as fast as I did because it was his first crab apple, but he was far faster than anyone else had trained because he just understood where he was at in the tree and where he had been and what the consequences of everything he did was.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's why I like it, is it's, for me, it's a universal language to discuss pruning. no matter what size tree or what species or what you're doing in it.
Yeah, I really like the imagery of the fractal. So you were trying to implement this in a company that's 30 or 40 people?
Production
arborists.
So. And then there was like 12 salespeople. And as far as I know, I ran into some of the guys that I work with at a friend's like holiday party this winter, and I was talking to him, and one of the other guys came up that I didn't know that worked at the company now, who's never met me before, and was like, "Oh, hey, yeah." And I was talking to him, like, "Oh, what are you doing?" He's like, "Oh, I run the clam," but he's like, "No, I do good, you know, pruning too. I get up in the tree. I do fractal pruning." And this dude's never met me before, but he knows how to move through a tree, and he was like really pumped that he like could figure out how to map through a tree and do good, what he considered good pruning, just using that language. He didn't know that was just my goofball idea that I just made up to try to get people to understand each other. They're still using it as far as I know. And
I guess I'm interested because it seems like at that large scale, that's not an easy task to get everybody on the same page with just some idea that you had. Was it?
Even with normal people, that would be hard. But with arborists, it's especially hard. Like, we are very individualistic people. It's a job that really attracts a lot of people who kind of like doing their own thing. Mm-hmm. Because when you're up in the tree, you are doing your own thing. Like, there's a lot of freedom in that. And so it attracts people who are very independent. And it took a while. But I think because it made people's jobs easier, they could talk to the client more about it. That's the other thing, is like, not only to get them on board, but get clients to understand in a 30-second talk or a 3-minute talk about their tree what we're going to do to it. So you're saying we're going to prune your tree and make it better, or you're like, you could explain it if you were versed in fractals, to be like, here's where we're going to make the cuts, look at this branch, walk them through the fractals, and be like, now I just scale it up, we're going to do that on your tree. That allowed those arborists to like do their job better and feel more confident. Mm-hmm. And they got more feedback from their clients and the salespeople. Like, everyone, it was very empowering to get everyone on board with that. That really helped get a bunch of independent people to, like, coalesce around an idea, which is, like, herding cats.
Mm.
I'm as guilty of it as any arborist.
So was this, like, was it a very formalized process? Did you sit the whole crew down in a front of a PowerPoint and was like,
no,
here's this idea about fractal pruning? Or is it sort of, like, just developed kind of...
I worked with some arborists that we were, my friends Mark McPhail and Jeff Hafner and I were all doing like shrub pruning and small tree pruning a lot at Rainbow. And we were trying to discuss how we can explain it. And through discussing, and Jeff really helped me understand, like took me to the next level in my reduction in subordination pruning. But getting that language, fractal pruning, really helped formulate that. So then we could train people. And once those people got trained, then they could train other people. So it wasn't really like a top-down thing at first. It was very much so like, I'm going to try to help people on my crew understand, and I'm going to train them. And hopefully if they get it, then they're going to train other people. So it was mindful of the three of us being like, I want to have people around me that can do this so that we can get the job done faster. We can get the job done better. Everyone takes more enjoyment out of their career, and they can like advance. Mm. And also I can advance as a foreman because my job is to help them become better at their job. Mm. And then once that started to come around, then it started to get a little more formalized. And that's where I started doing the fractal talk. So I took some of the stuff Jeff had done from his reduction pruning and then just put used fractal modeling to kind of scale that up a little bit more. So I took a lot of the ideas that he really brought with him from his experiences, which were really broad, working at in Boulder, Colorado, with lots of heavy snow loads and wind, and so they do a lot of reduction pruning, and we just put a little bit different language around it and made it kind of formalized. And then Rainbow had it, we could use it as a recruiting tool. We went and talked to like Mid-State, Stevens Point. I went out to Brigham Young University and Hennepin Tech, talked to the students there, and then gave a talk at the Shade Tree Short Course 3 years ago about it. And I've given a couple of talks afterwards. And I kind of have let it go, but after talking to Neville Fay, came into town for Rochester Arbor's workshop and the work he does with 800-year-old oaks, and started talking to him about it. All these other people who were doing this morphology stuff that I had no idea. Mm. about. Like, I didn't, he was like, oh, you know, he started talking about Allais, the French botanist who looked at reiteration in tropical trees and mapped all the different forms of, like, it was like 23 different forms across the world that tropical trees tend to look like. Never heard of that before. Didn't know this stuff existed, and really opened my eyes to it. And now I've started looking at their stuff and want to try to take it to the next level. But I don't know what that is.
Yeah, sure.
But
so, how deep did you go into fractals to try and develop this stuff, or is it?
Not just like I say to my friend Dave, who's an engineering buddy. We talk a lot. The thin veil. Like, I'm not a math person. Like, I cannot solve the basic algebraic equation. Like, I just not math. Like, not, never have been, never will be. I'm okay with that. It's fine. But I'm an arborist because I'm a close enough person. So, like, will this fit in the backyard if I fell it? Yeah, it will. Close enough. So for me, it was just like just using the language and the visual part of it, because I'm a very visual person, a very visual learner, and I think a lot of arborists are, that the visual pattern helped me. But after that, like using it to get like numbers and understand that, like, that's for scientists, not me. No, that's about as far as I went in the fractal thing. They're always kind of interesting to me and what people are doing with them, but past that, probably nothing.
So now you're with Branch and Bough.
Mm-hmm.
And so is this, do you use a similar language with that
company? Yeah, yeah. It's far less people, and the distance between the customer and I is different because it's a smaller company, but generally we use the same language, but we also don't have the influx of new people that we did at the larger company. So I just have, you know, once we had the discussion about it, and we'll talk about it at work, like, hey, what do you think about this cut? Do you think this is too large for a primary cut? Should I, you know, should I do a reduction and some thinning? Should I just do two reductions, and primary and secondary? We do it a little bit, but it's not as much because I don't have an influx of new people every year to kind of train. That's kind of partially why it atrophied a little bit, because everybody understands it. So we're all like, oh, okay, good. Yeah, I understand what we're doing.
So have you found that you come to a tree where it just doesn't work, the fractal pruning ideas just don't work for whatever reason, or have you been able to really, with every tree that you go to, you're able to utilize this?
This is how I see all trees, and the example I use in my talk, one of the last ones I use, is I do like a very basic fractal map using primary colors. So like red denotes the primary shape, yellow denotes the secondaries, and black is the tertiaries. So I would do very simple maps to denote that. And this last one, I did a fractal map for a four-stem pollarded cottonwood in Australia that I saw. And like, it still applies. Like, the shapes aren't exactly the same, but like, it's just one stick, and then off of it comes three smaller sticks. And off of those three smaller sticks comes like a plethora of even smaller sticks. Yeah. But they're all just generally straight sticks. So that's a very adulterated tree, but it's got a similar fractal shape and you can follow it. And that's the thing I like to use fractals is like everything we do as arborists when you're pruning influences the shape of that tree. So I'm always trying to balance with keeping the shape so that it still looks like that tree. You can tell bad pruning. You can see bad pruning. You're like, whoa, they changed the shape of that tree. Good pruning is just like that gentle nudge in a direction. But if you do that gentle nudge over a long time, you can push it really far. Like that cottonwood was just, the first cut was kind of drastic when they topped it. But then after that, it was the same thing over, just gentle nudges, and it just created huge taper and this very distinct shape that's not like what the tree normally would look like, but it was like gentle nudges. So they influence the fractal shape, but very slightly over time. That's where I think of like my subordinations in young trees. I'm changing the fractal shape. They're very much so fan-shaped, and I'm trying to make them more of an arrow, more of a cone.
Yeah.
So I'm doing it, but I want to do it gentler. Then the like Gilman's thing is like heavy because he has to. He's being forced by like budget and pruning cycle and time.
Yeah.
Whereas I have a luxury on some of those, so I can do it slightly over time and get that shape change, but with gentler nudges.
Now, how does that? Do you find that works on something like a Princeton or a Valley Forge?
Those I push harder.
Okay.
Those, especially after reading Chad's book and looking at some of the trees that he's pruned. When I say gentle, like an Autumn Blaze, you know, I'm talking like taking off like 20 to 35 to 40% of the live crown. I'm not changing the live crown ratio. I'm not as obsessed, but I'm not as bound by that because I'm not trying to necessarily raise trees as much. I don't have that 15-foot plow driving mm-hmm. through this Princeton Elm in somebody's front yard. I want to get my permanent branch up that high, but I'm not as bound to do it right away. So I'm taking it off of the top and the sides and pushing it in there. So those all, like Princeton Elms, is like, let's shoot for 50%. Let's punch this thing in the face and slow it down. Because mm-hmm. the ones where I did it too slightly, like those swamp white oaks behind this building, they're just still super decurrent. They didn't get organized. Those elms are even worse. They'll just go bonkers. Mm-hmm. My internship that I did out in the East Coast, they prune their elms twice a year. Their young elms, because they were fertilizing them, and they're growing like 8 to 12 feet a year on their hybrid elms. And I'm like, why are you fertilizing them? And they're like, they were just putting on trunks as fast as they could because it was a golf course and they had a nursery. So they'd prune them twice a year, and they'd just massive amounts of growth on the trunks so that they could get them out and spade them in as fast as possible. And, you know, it's a very expensive way to produce a tree, but it produced a decent structured tree very, very quickly.
The third and final part of our podcast with Nick will wrap up the fractal pruning concept by considering one of Da Vinci's theories, apical dominance, explained through river segment hierarchy metaphors, and Nick's thoughts on breaking barriers of industry pruning norms.
Da Vinci broke down trees. How I was thinking about him, he just did it a hell of a lot longer than I did. Like, he was way ahead, and if I had just found out about this, like, his drawings, you can just Google it. I asked Neville, like, where do you find this? He's like, oh, I just Googled it. And he measured the trunk, and then he measured a certain distance after the union broke and measured again, and then after it went decurrent again, and the number stays roughly the same. So, and I would always say decurrence breeds decurrence, or codominance breeds codominance. Once something goes codominant, it just keeps breaking. Like, that's the tree, just like, I'm just catching sun, I'm doing my thing. So if you can push it to have dominance, it'll stay dominant for a while, and then it'll break again. So, like, that's, like, Gilman's thing is, like, just get dominance enough to get it up, and then let it do its own thing. It's above the boulevard, that's as good as we're going to get, that's the budget we have. Like, that's an awesome way to do it.
So a fractal is essentially the repetitive nature of the growth of trees, on all aspects of the tree canopy to tree roots, correct?
Yes, yeah. The model I like to use is the Mississippi River. So why is it called the Mississippi River south of where the Minnesota and the Mississippi come together? Because the Mississippi has a higher flow, right? So it's the same thing. So if you start down in New Orleans, and you trace it all the way up. Every time another river branches in, you pick the bigger one, you trace it all the way up to Itasca, and you can jump over it. That's the headwaters, because at every branching below that, it's the bigger flow. So, and that's how Da Vinci thought of trees, was as that river. So if you think of the root system as that river delta, and you just start tracing your way up, that's New Orleans, and you find your way to Itasca, which is a very Minnesotan way to look at trees, but that's how I think about it. You're just trying to find Itasca. And so with young tree pruning, I will prune everything but where the headwaters is, because I want it to keep going up. But say it's that big silver maple we're talking about, or that crab apple, or that dogwood where I don't want it to get bigger, I will take that reduction cut at the headwaters. Mm. So for me, that's the difference between a subordination and a reduction prune. Or if you say a subordination, a suppression, formative pruning, structural pruning on young trees, whatever. The difference between those and a full reduction is one cut, in my mind.
And so, the reduction being the
headwaters. Yeah. So, but you're still doing all those other secondary cuts you were talking about. Your goals might be slightly different because you're like, I want to maintain this size as much as possible. Mm-hmm. I want to increase taper in relation to length. But on that subordination prune, you want to keep the length of the whole tree going. Mm-hmm. But those secondaries, you want to shorten and slow.
Have you ever worked with pruned a tree that was being treated with plant growth regulators?
Yeah, I have. I probably did a fair amount since Rainbow's doing a bunch of research in it. The ones that I know I pruned that were treated with plant growth regulators were when they were still trying to figure out dosage. So there were some lindens and some Norman maples they dosed, but the dosage was too high. So they were like, you know, the linden leaves were the size of a mouse's ear in August. So, like, those we just ended up just taking a couple low branches because they were, like, brushing on a car or, like, delivery trucks. Mm-hmm. But, like, that's, I'm sure I did some, but I didn't run into it a lot. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Gosh, you know, I think we're probably getting close to the end here, but so what do you think for you? I mean, you've been a production arborist for how long?
11 years.
So what's your, I mean, what's, where do you see yourself going? Like, you're getting into this, like, it's almost like philosophy in some ways about.
Yeah, I think that's my, been my hang up in the last year is trying to understand the philosophy of it. Like, people have discussions about gear or pruning techniques or what we're, research on trees and what we're doing to them, but I think my obsession now is looking at trying to build a language so that we can have this common mark, this common space to have a conversation about what we're doing in trees, whether that is pruning or that is a climbing technique, to just say, like, how is this affecting, for me as a climber, the big three are productivity, efficiency, and safety. But you could have that, whether it's scientifically valid, like, what's the most recent research? And in between all of those things is where we're trying to operate as arborists. But if we can use that language to talk about it and say, well, because if you don't, what happens is people get stuck in their, and this is very indicative of where America is right now, you get stuck in your little information silo and you want to stay where you're at. And the people around you reinforce your beliefs. And we all do this. It's not a good or bad thing. It just is. But if you have that common space where you can all come in and say, hey, this is where I'm thinking, and here's the language we all agree to talk about these things, instead of saying, I think what you're doing is wrong, or I think what I'm doing is right, saying, like, well, given these four factors, what am I, where am I landing in those? Like, honestly, how productive is this? How safe is this? How, what's the efficacy of the science behind this, you know? All, if you can have a language to talk about that instead of just being like, well, people who do that thing, they just, you know, they just don't know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And I think about, like, people like, oh, topping trees is terrible. It's awful. And I have topped a bunch of trees. And you know what? Sometimes you're like, well, I got to top this to pollard it. So, like, I topped a small silver maple and started pollarding it, and I've topped a small walnut and started pollarding it. Like, are, is that topping really that bad? And you're like, well, no, not in that instance. I have to start the, to do that cultural practice. Mm-hmm. That's one of those inflammatory terms where then everyone stops listening to each other, like, I don't want to hear about what you have to say. You say, I don't think natural target pruning is the best way to prune a tree. I think we should be looking at more like Hamburg cut and Neely's cuts where you're nicking the collar, and I think there's some validity behind that. Well, you don't want to do natural target pruning. I don't even want to talk to you. And you're like, well, so how do you get past that? Mm-hmm. I think it, finding that common language, like we did, like I found with fractals, to get people to talk about what they're doing in pruning, like, how do we get people to talk about the whole portion of our borer culture?
Yeah, I think one of the awesome things going forward for me, where I've been, had the opportunity to do a little bit of developmental pruning, but I haven't had a chance to really see the outcome of my pruning cuts. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Do you have trees where you're always going back, where you I think you mentioned before, like,
yeah,
you go back and, yeah, you see this old tree?
I go back to, there's a handful of trees I go back to. I mean, I still know where the first tree I ever pruned was. I pruned it. Mike put me up a hackberry on the north side of Bailey Hall, and I go see it every 2 years. And I really want to get a fractal map drawn of it and get that tattooed on my body, because that was one of those pivotal moments. But, like, that's a tree I go back to, which I just did, like, four thinning cuts and dropped out. You know, I didn't do anything, but there are a handful of trees that I still have that I go back to. There's a couple that I had at Rainbow that have switched companies, and now I get to prune at Branch and Bough. There are some trees that I was really sad in leaving Rainbow. Rainbow treated me very well. I really liked the company. We were just going in different directions, but I was sad to leave some of the people I worked with, and I was really sad to see some of the trees I was working with, because I had, like, a 7-year relationship with some of those trees where I'd gone back to them 3, 4, five times to do young tree pruning, and I didn't get to go back to them. And it was like, I couldn't. That's where you learn. Like, I'm thinking on like a tree scale, as an arborist, the ability to go back to those trees is so informative. Mm-hmm. But there's still a few, like, for family and friends. My sister's trees are ones that, like, I've really formulated fractal pruning on, and I've been pruning mostly annually. I switched to a two-year cycle that I've been pruning for almost a decade. Mm-hmm. And I learned a ton from those five trees, like just an absolute ton.
Just the way they're reacting.
That's what they convinced me that sprouts aren't bad. Like, I love sprouts. Sprouts on cuts are awesome because they occlude cuts faster. And then they just often shut down, or they just become a branch. Like, they do amazing things. And I wouldn't have known that had I not been able to go back to those trees and every year and literally watched how much faster those occlude than other ones. Like, that's Gilman's big push, is like, prune trees and see what they do. Like, that's how you learn. So finding where you can keep going back to trees is always like the tough part.
Yeah.
Neville Fay asked me, what's the longest relationship you had with a tree? And I never thought about that till he asked me that. And now I think about, like, how important that is to, as an arborist, to be like, I've had a relationship with this tree for that hackberry down there. I've only pruned it once, but I have a relationship with that tree for 14 years. You know, I've had 10 years of pruning on my sister's trees. Like, that is monumental. I cannot wait to be like, I've had a relationship with this tree for 30 years, you know? Like, my trees, I have a Dawn Redwood in my front yard. It's from 2014. Cannot wait to see what that tree does in 30 years. Keep track of those trees. I have friends who have, like, their GPS markers and their GIS maps of trees that they, like, go back to and they go visit, like, big trees, small trees, interesting trees. They go back to them and see them. Like, keeping those is I wish I had been doing that, because there's a ton of trees that are like, I wonder what that bur oak is doing. You know, I reduced it over the house, but, like, how much did it change? Like, there's a ginkgo on the other side of Alderman Hall.
Yeah.
That my advisor, Stan Hokinson, had me do some reductions so he could still see the display garden. And I want to go back and see those cuts, because I haven't gone to look at them in years. Mm-hmm. And I made some, like, three-inch cuts in there.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to go check on them after a couple of years, but I'm like, where are they at now? It's been, like, 11, 12 years.
That tree's looking pretty good.
It's a sweet tree. But I want to go look at those cuts and be like, what happened? Like, what's going on? Because I haven't got a chance to reduce many ginkgos.
Yeah.
Might have to go do that after this.
Right there. Just quick.
Yeah, I'll just go knock on Stan's door and be like, hey, can I look out your window?
He's probably over there right now.
I'll freak him out. He was always disappointed when I told him I was going to become an arborist. He's like, oh, Nick, what are you going to drink beer and get tattoos? And I was like, yeah! And, like, now I have a sleeve tattoo and I love drinking beer. And he's just like, oh, you could do so much more, Nick.
No, you're doing awesome stuff. This is so cool. Fractal pruning. It's probably going to be... Maybe they'll teach it here someday, right?
I don't know about that. It's just a crazy idea.
Cool, Nick. This has been really cool. I think people are probably going to have, like, some questions after this.
Sure,
Glad
to answer them. Thanks for having me. This has been fun.
Hopefully get a chance to talk to you again in the future sometime. But
for sure.
It's been a lot of fun. Thanks a lot.
Love to come back. Thanks for having me.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Urban Tree Junkies podcast. This podcast is produced by the Urban Forestry Outreach, Research, and Extension Lab in the Department of Forest Resources at the University of Minnesota, Twin Cities.